Hello, Toasties! Welcome back to another stellar episode of Pyro Toasty Talks. Today we're going to be talking about planning the art. We have with us today myself, Brian, the lovely Zona Greg.
Hello!
The charming Renee.
Hello.
And the ever-enthusiastic wow. David.
Searching, racking his brain for a compliment.
Not true.
Happy to be here. Good to see everyone tonight.
So today we're going to be talking about planning the art. I think Renee and Zona, you probably have some really strong feelings about this one. So I think I'm just going to turn it right over to the two of you. So Renee, what do you do? Do you start with the wood? Do you start with the art? Do you start with an idea? Do you let the wood speak to you? Do you let the art come to you and then find the right piece? What's the process?
Bob. Yes, all of the above. So I don't really have one process, and there isn't just one thing that I go through every time. It's always different. So sometimes I have an idea and it's like, ooh, this could be really cool. What piece of wood do I want to put it on? So I already have the idea. Then I pick the wood and then I can go from there and it's pretty smooth sailing. Other times I have a piece of wood and I'm like, I really don't know what I'm going to put on this. So I'm just going to put it off to the side until I think of something. Other times, I have a specific piece of wood, and I'm like, ooh, you know what would go really good on this piece of wood? X, Y, or Z. And then I will come up with a design or an idea or whatever to put on that piece of wood. So it's always different. Sometimes I have a very specific vision for what I want, and I have to navigate how to get to the end result, whether that means I have to wait for David to make me a piece of wood that I want to use, or if I already have a piece of wood I want to use, how can I make my idea fit that piece of wood? So it's always kind of a different idea or a different process. What about you, Zona?
On that note, before I forget the question, so you are in a really unique situation because you don't have to go searching for the canvas, because you can, let's say you start with an idea. You want to do a beetle, for instance.
Sure.
Right? And you're in your head, you're thinking, you know, flowers and blooms and whatever, and you go, beetle! And you go, I think I want to do this on a 8x12 piece of cherry wood with these corners and that.
David can just make that for me.
Exactly. You can turn around and be like, hey, David.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's my idea, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then David goes, okay, I'm yep. assuming, or something along those lines. And then at some point in the very near future, he comes home and goes, here, Renee, is this good? I'm assuming along those lines, of
yep.
course. I'm just a fly on the wall in your house. That little bug that's in the corner that giggles, that's probably me.
That's what Jack's always staring at.
It's the bugs.
So, I mean, you're in a very unique situation like that. Like, mm-hmm. I laugh and I jest about the situation, but is that kind of similar, like, how that works
yeah.
for you guys?
I do have specific things every now and then that I want David to make for me. I don't feel like I ask you for things very often.
I almost wish you would ask more often, but...
Oh, really? Because I have a list of things that I would love to have, but...
Well... Especially if you want bigger pieces.
I do, yeah. I have specific things that I want you to make.
Because we don't always make, like, here, Timberdoodle drop, this is a $200 canvas set. Like, I'm not just going to make this
well, right.
in the shop one day.
Right. Okay, so that's part of my hesitation is, like, sometimes you're busy or we have a lot of things coming up. Asking you to do one more thing is just kind of, like, not on the table, so I just don't even bring it up. It's like, oh, I'll just wait. Plus, it's not a priority for me right now anyway. I'm not dying to make this piece, so, like, it's fine. It can wait. I'll just talk about it later.
I think you make your best art when you have the vision first and then work from it. Whereas, like, when I'm just bringing home pieces and you're keeping some of them for yourself, I feel like you sometimes then are struggling to find something to put on those pieces, and it doesn't have quite the cohesiveness of vision as it does the other way around.
I don't know. I think it depends on the piece. So, like, Beetle Boy. You remember Beetle Boy?
Yes.
That was, I have this panel. I really want to do a beetle. I'll just do a beetle on this panel. And then it turns out you really loved Beetle Boy.
Beetle Boy sounds like somebody who's on the cover of The Inquirer.
Well, that's interesting, David. So,
yes.
You said that you would like her to ask you more for pieces. Now, is that because it gives you an inspiration for pieces to make?
Are you reading my notes?
No, we're just in tune like that, that I read your notes in the back of my head. Babe, really? Not know this by now? But, like, is that how that works for you? Like, does this help you when you're thinking about what to make for, like, the next drop, for instance, or what you're going to make to put in the shop? Like, what she asks for, is that a part of an inspiration for you, or is it?
Sometimes it depends. She doesn't ask very often.
I rarely ask things.
Like, we recently, somebody asked for, if you remember the breadboards we had made, they were small. Somebody asked for them bigger. So I made three just because I don't like making just one of a thing that's that big, because if I drop it on the floor and it's ruined, then that sucks. It's easier to make two or more at the same time than it is to make one and then break it and then make another one.
Mm-hmm. Batch work.
Yeah. We filled that custom request, and then we had two left over, and those eventually we found a home for them. So, like, if it was something like that that we knew somebody else would want, I would make more than one. But I just, like, it's nice to have some kind of direction sometimes in the shop. Because sometimes my worst days for productivity are when I'm between drops or, like, big projects, and I'm just standing in the shop thinking, like, and now what? But I can't, I don't do a good job of doing that thinking at home, so I have to be in the shop just, like, walking around and touching all of the wood and feeling like I'm wasting time until I finally start doing something.
Well, that's
interesting, because that's an artist's way, or at least for me, like, when I'm in between ideas, like, I'll be making a piece and I'm, like, all in, and my OCD ADHD brain is just, like, all in on a piece, and that has consumed me entirely, and then I'll be done with that piece, and then I'm like, wait, I had, like, five things that I wanted to do, and they have all escaped my brain, and now I don't know what to do, and I'm like, I've got piles of wood, and I don't know what the hell to make. Sorry, that was just, like, an epiphany for me. That was a squirrel for me, don't mind me.
I think it happens for everyone, but Brian, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, David, so the other way around, right? So, you know, there's the opportunity, since the two of you work on, you know, two sides of the same coin. Do you ever hear Renee talking about a piece that she wants to do and then feel inspired to say, I know exactly the cut of wood, I know exactly the technique that I want to use to make the canvas for this piece?
Not really. I don't think Renee, so for one thing, I think sometimes Renee keeps her ideas in her head until she's ready to bring them forth. So it's not like I hear her just muttering to herself in the room about, like, if only I had a piece fit for a ladybug. Like, it's hard for me, because I don't think Renee's particularly driven by the wood. Going back to her planning of art, and she can tell everyone that I'm wrong or not. But I don't, like, she's less driven by the wood species or anything like that than she is by, like, the size and or shape of the canvas. And so there's not really much for me to know besides how big, what shape. She has been telling me that she wants me to finish making a bunch of boxes for her, so that's on the agenda.
See, I find that you're kind of the opposite Zona, because you tend to like really take inspiration from the wood. You'll sit there and look at a piece of wood and then try to think, what is going to look good on this, right? Especially when you're doing the stuff that Jessica does with the fractals.
Oh, absolutely. You look at that.
The lighthouse.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because you said you looked at that piece and was like, a lighthouse would go really good on this piece.
When it comes to the fractal pieces that Jessica's pieces, 1,000%, I will tell her, like, I'm thinking of, you know, making a lighthouse, or I'm thinking of this piece, and I want the lightning to look this way, and she'll try to give me a piece that I want, but it is what it is. It'll do what it does, because right. That's the way that lightning works. And sometimes she'll, like, the last batch of pieces that she gave me, she's like, well, this is what I was thinking when you said for this piece. And I'll look at it and go, in my head, I'm like, it's not really what I was thinking. Like, it's not going to suit the picture that was in my head. Now, does that mean I'm not going to use this wood? No, I can think of something else for it, right? Like, there's a piece that I've had for a year now, and I finally got the inspiration for what that piece is. Mm-hmm. Last week, I've got it patterned out. I just have to do it. Wait until you see it. and that is a perfect example of the wood told me mm-hmm. what it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And that sounds so weird. But like I sat and I said, I've been staring at this wood. With her pieces, I stare at the wood and think about what would look best on it.
Yeah.
With the fractal pieces, absolutely. That's what I do. And I've sat on pieces of wood for years.
But
I think that's what I would do with fractal pieces too. Because the fractal is such a huge part of it. Like, you have mm-hmm. to work with it.
Mm-hmm. You can't... with the fractal pieces, you can't just... I'm just going to throw...
Right.
A sunflower on this. Like, it doesn't match the wood in any kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, it just wouldn't work. But I do pieces with magnolias on it. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, they look like tree bark.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks like trees. And it works. You know, I'm trying to work with it. Work with the fractals, work with the grain of wood, whatever the case may be. And that's how it looks its best. Mm-hmm. Other pieces, you know, just like you, I'll be like, well, I want to do, I don't know. I want to do a big B. You know, what do I want to put it on? Mm-hmm. I think I want to do it on a triangle piece of wood. Mm-hmm. Well, what triangle piece of wood do I have? And I'll sit there and search through my piles of wood. And then I'll search for something, and if I don't have it... Hey, David, can you make this?
Well, I mean, I think that we go to Klutz, or we go to Carolina Urban Lumber, and you'll walk around, especially when they have the bins, and you'll go look through cookies, or you'll look through... you know, they've got offcuts. And
I love my offcuts.
Yeah, because you like that kind of rustic look a lot of times for a lot of your pieces. And you'll sit there and you'll say, what can I do with this, mm-hmm. right? You'll put some thought into, like, you won't just buy a piece of wood and say, all right, I'm going to buy this and then I'll figure out what I'm going to put on it. You'll look at it and you'll say, what would look good on this, you know? Would this look good as a map? Would this look good with... You know, like, we were trying to think of some stuff to do for that Wizard of Oz thing, and you were like, oh, which pieces of wood would look good together for a set or for, you know, for a collection? And I think you put a lot of thought into it based on the wood itself, as opposed to just, you know, coming up with the ideas for art and then just finding a piece of wood to put it on.
That is so interesting. I'm so the opposite. Okay, so, like, if I was walking around a wood shop, it's not so much what I think would look good on the wood. I think in color a lot. So, like, if I was looking through a bin and it was a bunch of, like, end grain walnut cookies, I would definitely be like, I don't know what I'm going to put on this, but I know like silvery and white metallics would look so good. So I'll figure out something. So I'll go ahead and get them. I don't know what I'm going to put on it, but I know silver would really pop on this. Or like if there's a really pretty piece of cherry that has a lot of figure and chatoyance, I don't want to cover that up because usually I want those features to like stand out by themselves. So it's like, ooh, this piece is so pretty. I don't know what I'm going to put on it, but I want it. And I know whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to let the design really pop. Like, that's how I think.
Renee, you know you can't just throw a word out like chatoyance and not...
Oh, chatoyance. So, you know when the wood has, like, that glittery, shimmery effect? It looks like water ripples?
It's what makes curly maple look curly. Like, the effect of the maple...
Like on Felicity's box, how it has, like, those rolls of... Yeah, that's chatoyance.
Because the wood is flat. It's okay. The wood's flat. It's just the grain pattern is different. Like interior to the wood, and they call that chatoyance.
Yeah.
Neato.
Yeah.
We'll have to put a picture of that up.
So if a piece of wood has a lot of that, it's like, oh, I don't want to cover that up, but I don't know what I'm going to put on it. But I'm also, I feel like you are more inclined, or maybe just differently inclined than me, but I feel like you are more inclined to do things outside of your comfort zone, because I know you really like your florals, and I remember last year in a couple of episodes Brian was saying like, oh, I think that's like the thing you're really good at, but you also do things like Lord of the Rings map and the lighthouse, whereas me, I don't tend to be like, you know what would look good on this piece of wood, a lighthouse. I'll figure out how to do a lighthouse in my style. Uh-uh, that's not happening. It's going to be like, what do I want to put on it? And I will make it match the wood. I'm just not as exploratory with some of my subject matters as you are, I think.
That is interesting. I think what it is that I tend to get bored if I do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I'm good at florals, but I couldn't do like 10 pieces of florals back to back to back to back to back. I'd hate florals at the end of that.
See, no, I would love it, because if I can do all of them differently, like, oh yes, I love it.
I would not want to do them again. So that's why I'll do florals. I'll do a couple of pieces of florals, yeah. Like floral stuff. But then I'll do some like realistic shading kind of stuff. And then I'll do some coloring book pieces type stuff where it's just lines and colors.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, all right, I'm done with lines and colors, and I need to go back to some more realistic kind of stuff.
Okay. So here's a question. Okay. If we both had to do 10 pieces of florals, you say you would be totally done by the end with florals, but what if you had the ability to do them differently every time? Like, what if you had to do 10 florals, but you could do cherry blossoms, a magnolia, a dahlia, a sunflower? Like, you could do 10 different flowers, and you can do them in all different styles. You could use glitters for this one, you could use watercolors for that. So like, is that still too similar enough that you would be tired of it?
No. If it was...
Is it like, if you had to repeat it 10 times exactly the same way, that's when you're like, yes, done?
Okay. That's when it... Like, if I had to do 10 sunflowers exactly the same, I'm not going to do a sunflower again for a really, 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 really long
time. Okay, see, I'm the same.
But if it was 10 florals, different kinds of flowers, and I could do them differently.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. Because, like, I'd probably do, like, maybe one or two of them. I might do lines in lots of color. Mm-hmm. I might do some of them with lines, but, like, watercolor, just, like, watercolor pencils, but no, like, glitter. I might do some in just, like, black and white, so lots of shading. I might do some in cork, so it'd be like I'd get to do like just really simple lines and not a lot of shading. Like, I'd be able to do them all differently.
Yeah.
But they'd be floral. and they'd be nice.
Yeah.
But there'd be variances in them, and okay. I'd be okay with that.
Okay.
But if it was just, like, 10 coasters, they're all the same. I'd bleh. Be like, ooh, we're not doing that again.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I like to have variations, but if it was like, mm-hmm. ooh, I need to do 10 flowers, that would just light me up because I can do them all different ways. Hell yeah. Because like what you said, I can do some with like really bold outlines, and then I might try doing like really delicate details. And then I might do all glitter with glittery shimmer watercolors. And there's so much I can do with it that I wouldn't be bored of that.
Right. But that's exactly it. It's like, if I could do them differently, I'm okay. If I had to do them exactly the same... Mm-hmm.
You're not okay.
I'm losing my mind. I'm not okay with that.
Yeah.
But like you, if I'm walking through Klutz, mm-hmm. which is the other lumber mill that we've gone to, and I'll walk around just to see what they have, I might come across a piece of wood and be like, that's really pretty. And I have no idea what I'm putting on it. Mm-hmm. But I want that piece of wood, and I will figure out what piece of art I'm putting on that. And he's looked at me like, what are you putting on that? I'm like, I have no clue.
But I want it. Yeah. Yes.
I'm getting that wood.
That's how I am whenever I go to the lumber mill with David. I'm like, this piece is coming home with us.
I remember the last time when I sent you the picture of the curly maple, and he was just like, this is why Renee can't come to
the lumber mill with me. Because I would come home with hundreds of dollars of, quote, unnecessary wood.
If I'm walking through, which is also why I don't go to Carolina Urban Lumber much anymore, and I don't go to Klutz much anymore. One, because I'm like, I can't spend the money on that.
Well, we've got a stockpile of wood too.
That's the other reason why. He's just like, first of all, where are you putting it? To what are you planning to do with it? And I can't keep saying, I'll figure it out.
Right.
Because he's just
not
like,
until you figure out
the what other
you're going to do with the ones that you said you were going to figure out
2 years
what
ago.
You were going to do with the last time you bought them. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. You need to use We've what you this... have before you get more. But I don't want to do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, we have a lumber cart. So we built a lumber cart. And the idea was, you know, all right, well, we'll build the lumber cart. This way the wood's not all sitting all over the floor and it's not getting, you know, it's not exposed to the elements. We could slide it all in there. We could stand it upright and we put some wheels on it so it rolls around the garage. That thing is jam-packed. Like, you can't fit another piece of wood in there. We've had to rearrange them several times just to make room for the ones that you bought.
And then we erected the heavy-duty steel shelves around the garage and filled that with more wood.
Yeah, that's
got a
lot of wood on it too. Yeah, yeah. And they're slowly starting to go on bins that are on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, no. It's like I know I'm telling myself that I need to stop buying wood because I need to use the wood that I already have. So.
See, but that's a whole process in and of itself because now you have to think backwards a little bit. You have to think, okay, now I can't just go off of vibes. I have to use this piece of wood. What do I do with it? But you have all this wood to go through. Like, I'm the same way. I have all this freaking wood, and it's like I need to do something with it. I can't just keep saving it for later, but I don't know what I want to put on it. So that part tends to be kind of like a hard stumbling block for me sometimes because I just go in circles. It's like, it's so pretty, I want it, but I don't know what to put on it, but I need to use it, but I don't know what to put on it, and I don't want to put the wrong thing on it because if it's the wrong thing, then I'll regret it and be like, I didn't use this wood to its full potential. It could be prettier if I had done XYZ. So like, now I feel like I wasted this wood, so I don't want to feel like I wasted the wood, so I'll just keep the wood and I'll save it.
I have a question about that.
And then the other problem is, like, did I waste the wood?
Right. Did I waste it?
I just put something on it to put something on
it. Exactly. I don't want to put something on it to just put something on it.
Exactly. And then you've burnt it already and colored it and sealed it. And then you're like,
you know what would look really good on this piece of...
This art would have looked really good on this. And then you're like...
Damn it.
Exactly. And then for that split second, do you not sit there and think,
what if I sanded it off?
Exactly. Put it down and redo it. But then you say, but that was wasted time. But.
But I know you're like sitting there like weighing. Like, exactly. Angel and demon on your shoulder.
You're, like, staring at it. And Brian will sit there and look at me like, what is going through your head? Because he'll like analysis paralysis, because I'll just have these exactly. things going off in my head. And he'll be like, stop. Mm-hmm. Because I'll sit there and argue with myself over why I should or should not redo
uh-huh.
it. And then that's when he just kind of like backs me out.
But sometimes you wouldn't know what would have looked really good on it until you go through the process of just putting something on it. Because you would have never realized, oh shit, you know what would have looked really good? Really pretty white sparkly flowers would have looked really good on. But like, I would have never gotten there had I not put a bug on blank. It. Yeah, right. Blank on it. I know.
Yes. Yes.
So, but just by the nature of it being art, mm-hmm. you say that you don't want to waste the wood, or that you're afraid that what you're going to put on there isn't going to be perfect. By the just the very nature of art, it's never perfect. Right? I mean, it's always going to be subject to interpretation. It's always going to be... It's going to be perfect for someone. It's not going to be perfect for everyone.
Yeah.
So how do you like, make that distinction that this is an imperfect piece? Because, it, like you said, I think you had an example of a piece that had jellyfish on it. And you despise the piece.
That I trade for a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah, yeah, you were going to trade it for the bag of Cheetos. And the woman who bought it from you absolutely loved mm-hmm. it. So is there really, there's not really a right or a wrong or a perfect or an imperfect way to make art. So, no. I mean, when you look at something and you say, this isn't perfect... Like, how do you come to that conclusion?
If it doesn't match what I would have wanted it to look like. A lot of the times, I have an idea of what I want it to look like, and if I can't get it to that, or if I have overworked a piece, or whatever, if it doesn't match what I had in my head, I'm not going to be as happy with it as I could have been if I had gotten it to that point. But the flip side of that is a lot of the times I don't know what I want the end result to be like. Like with Beetle Boy, I just wanted to do a really cool color shifting beetle. And I make all of my artistic decisions along the way. But you can, at least in my head, I can mess up, in air quotes, mess up one part along the way, and then the whole thing is thrown off and it's absolutely not what I envisioned it. And to me, that it's not a true success. And like, sure, someone will like it. I don't like it, but someone will like it. So whatever. But other times when I am really happy with a piece, usually I have made all of the correct artistic decisions along the way to get me to that point. So here's an example. If I'm doing a piece and I start adding white highlights, I can add too many white highlights to where the highlights don't stand out anymore, or I can put them in the wrong spots that don't quite make sense for where a highlight should be. And at that point, I would tell myself in my head, because I'm so mean to me, I would say like, wow, like I just ruined it with that. If I had stopped the white highlights like 10 highlights ago, it would have looked so much better, because I don't like how this is looking. But David might come in and be like, it looks fine to me. Like, what's the problem? And it's like, well, I didn't know I wouldn't have liked all of these white highlights until I added them. But now it's too late. And I think I would have liked it 10 minutes ago if I had just stopped. But again, to your point, someone will like it. I don't like it. But someone will. There's a lot of that, especially when it's something experimental. And so, like, it's hard to be like, whoa, I wasted the wood. Because it's like, well, I didn't waste it. I felt like I could have done something that I would have liked better on it. But I didn't know that I would have done something better on it had I not have done this. So it's okay. Like, someone will like it. Someone will buy it. It's not a waste, but it's just not my favorite. It's a very like mixed emotion thing.
I think, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, our audience, mm-hmm. people who are listening to this, and I hope that that's something, like, I think that's something that, as an artist, it's important to be cognizant of, mm-hmm. that even if something is not perfect for you,
yeah.
and something is not up to your own expectations,
right.
doesn't mean that somebody else isn't going to absolutely love it.
Right.
We were at an art show, so Zona had a piece in that's up at the Episcopal Church in Charlotte. It's the Lighthouse, the Beacon. Mm-hmm. It was we were there for the judging, and while we were there, we took a walk around, and I saw one of the other artists, Liz. We'll link to her Instagram in the show notes. She does digital art, and she made this. It was just this little piece that I think she was asking $50 for. Mm-hmm. And it was a frog, and it was, like, super colorful. And I absolutely adored this thing. And I said, I need to have this frog in our house because it's wonderful. And, I mean, to me, like, you know, the judge walked around, and he, you know, rated all of the other art. And, you know, he came with his assessment of what the winners were. But to me, that piece was the one that spoke to me. That mm-hmm. was the one that was perfect for me. Right. That was the one that I would want to have in my house. And I hope that a lot of the artists who listen to this realize that there are a lot of people out there who have very different expectations of what art should be, mm-hmm. and that they love they'll find people who love the art.
Oh. Yeah. Zona is showing us the frog currently.
I dig this frog.
We'll put the
frog
up on this one.
Isn't he fantastic?
He's pretty cool. He looks like a poison dart frog. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's the kind of digital art that she does. She has another one that I'm eyeballing.
I asked if she
hasn't.
Would...
She hasn't made the print of it yet, but I'm eyeballing it. She's well aware that I'm eyeballing it.
I asked her if she would make me a squid.
But that's the kind of art, and to be honest, like, that's... But yeah, with art, it's...
We're going to get together and play some board games.
Yes.
There really isn't, a wrong.
There isn't, and I... You know, you were asking about right and wrong art. I think it's about perspective, mm-hmm. right? Because what is perfect to me is not perfect to Renee, right? And I'm like... And Renee can look at a piece of art that I've done and be like, it's almost perfect. You add this, and I'll be like, no, it's perfect, right?
Yeah.
And it's a perspective, you know. It's not because I'm wrong or whatever. It's just, it's art is absolutely perspective, and it's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on that note, Brian, you said you want people who are listening to hear us and think about this. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, there is no wrong way to do art. It absolutely is perspective. And even if a piece that you're doing doesn't come out the way you wanted it to, or whatever, you're disappointed in the way it came out, or whatever, doesn't mean somebody else isn't going to like it. It absolutely will still find someone. But it is okay. Like, I want you to know that it is okay to feel disappointment with your own art sometimes. It happens, but it's also I feel like it's a really important part of the learning process, because now you know, well, I don't like that effect, or ooh, I feel like I took it too far and it doesn't match my original thought, my original concept, or whatever. Like, it's all part of a learning game, and when you mess up, in your own terms, whatever messing up might mean to you, mm-hmm. it's okay. You're still going to learn something from it, and you can always turn around and try again.
I worry about people getting dissuaded by their own inner monologue, you know, mm-hmm. that this wrong decision has ruin this piece, and then they're afraid to go to shows, they're afraid to enter it into competitions,
yeah.
they're afraid to submit it for juried shows.
I feel
because,
that.
Because, you know, they look at every piece that they have, and they see the imperfections in it, because as not an artist, looking at other people's art, I don't see the imperfections that the artist sees.
Yeah.
And I just see what I like. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what I like is not perfect.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, those imperfections are things that I'm blind to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that the people listening, you know, they hear this, because I'm sure that it's going to resonate with them. I just, you know, I hope that it's, you know, they can connect with those people who are going to love their pieces, even if they see the imperfections mm-hmm. in them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other thing about, quote unquote, you know, messing up or making a mistake is that as artists, we never stop learning, right? We never
right.
stop learning a new technique. We should never stop learning. We should never stop learning a new technique or a new medium or a new this or that. We should always be experimenting, and we should always be trying to learn new things and be better at the craft, right? And I mean, not just as artists, but as, you know, people, learners.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of what we should do. But part of learning is messing up or
exactly
quote, unquote, making a mistake, but that's how you learn. But I also think, you know, to Brian's point, I think, you know, I've spoken to people who have put up art and I'm like, you know, that's a really cool piece that you did, and I'll just see the art for what it is, like this big splashes of color on this canvas, and it's just, I'll just see the color because I'll just gravitate towards colors.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, like I'll just, that's just really pretty because I just like sparkles and colors. And they're like, yeah, I hate it because it's not the way I wanted it to be, and it didn't land the way I wanted it to, and it's not, you know, the shape I wanted it to, and they're telling me all the things that was wrong about it, and I'm like, I didn't see any of those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I simply just like the fact of this. And actually, the fact that you're telling me that you messed it up is actually what makes it better to me. Because it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't mind the imperfections.
Yeah.
So much. But I, you know, we are our own worst critic.
This is true.
Do not let that stop you from entering the show or trying the market, or
yeah, I would say don't let it stop you. Like, even if you have those thoughts about yourself, like, okay, but let's process those thoughts and let's move past those mm-hmm. thoughts. Like,
people, artists of all media should go make friends with potters, because potters blow up their pieces all the time, and they are some of the chillest people about failing in their pursuits. Because it's like, well, I thought I did everything right, but apparently there was like an unforeseen steam bubble in the side of the vase and it just blew apart in the kiln while I was firing it. And it's like, oh, well, grind it all back up and do it again.
What?
That's very interesting. Yeah, we've got some interesting potters who
they're
are
always
like
so
that.
Chill.
They're so chill. It's because they know not to like hang on to anything. Because, like, the biggest disappointment is opening the kiln to see that your piece is shattered. And if you were really attached to it, it can be heartbreaking. And you just got to get over that shit.
Yeah. I can imagine glass blowers would be the same way.
Yeah.
I was watching one of those glass blower competition shows on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you would see people, all of the effort that goes into that, and then just one small mistake, setting the heat too high, leaving it in too long, one tap of the glass, and that thing shatters to pieces.
Ugh.
And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I definitely don't want anyone listening to this to feel dissuaded.
Oh, definitely not. I mean,
I don't think they will. I know that they have, because I've heard this before. I think it's a pretty common
mm-hmm.
thing to think about, you know, that you see the mistakes, you see the things that you've done wrong, you know what you expect in your head, and it doesn't match up with what you see on the wood.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, and I've heard so many people say that in so many different mediums, and I just hope that they realize that it's not game over. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not that they have to pack it up, hang up their razor tip or their
Optima,
and go, you know, find another
medium to work with. There's opportunity to learn, and there's opportunity for to connect those pieces to customers who are really going to love them.
Absolutely.
I mean, even experts were bad at their craft at one point.
And experts still make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Even subject matter experts.
Yeah.
So we had talked about what inspires you. Do you ever try, when you look at a piece or when you look at several pieces, do you see them and you think of a theme? I know we talked a little bit about collections in the last episode, and we talked about sets, and we talked about pieces that together form a cohesive whole. Do you ever look at pieces and think, all right, this would make a great series that would play off well to each other? Like, Zona, you've worked, you've talked about your set of the elements. You talked about your collection that you did on for the homebrew tap room. I know, Renee, you said you really don't do collections, but do you ever look at the pieces and think, this would do really well as a set that would that would play off of each other well?
Not really, no.
I will, I guess, disagree with Renee a little bit about herself, which is maybe presumptuous of me.
Okay, go ahead.
But you'll go through phases where you're like, I'm folk arty right now, or I'm mandalas for this month or whatever. I mean, you don't necessarily say it quite so clearly as that, but you go through creative spurts where you're in your folk art.
Yeah, but that's just me being really into something. That's not me looking at wood thinking what will go together or what could make a set or what could make a collection. I don't think like that.
You did. With the skinny live edge pieces that you kept, you had kept some of those long live edge skinny pieces, and you were like, I want to make these as folk art ones and have them displayed all together.
That is true, because I was in kind of a live edge folk art kind of vibe at the time. But
there was also your cat shelf sitters. That was kind of a set, a collection.
It was. Okay, so for the cats, I was trying to make product. I wasn't looking to create art with them. So that...
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, depends on how you look at it. I don't look at it as a collection. I was like, I need to make cat shelf sitters, so what are the pieces that I can make cat shelf sitters on? Yeah, I don't know. Just thinking about the folk art live edge pieces, I think I did like 5, but I definitely didn't think of them in terms of a collection. Like, I just really liked the folk art and I really liked the live edge.
Well, you told me to hang them on the wall as a collection.
Yes, because I think they would look good together. And they did look good together because they were all the same kind of wood and they were all the same style. Because I did them all at the same time because I was in that folk art funk for that time. So, like, they definitely all went together, but I didn't think of it that way. I think that was just kind of more of a happy accident that it came out that way because I didn't go into it with that intention.
So you didn't plan it that way, but it kind of ended up being
That way. But going back to Brian's question, like, I didn't look at the wood and be like, you know what would go really good with these? This would be a great set. Like, it was just like, well, I have these pieces. Like,
but do you think that the style of wood is you chose it because you thought this would go really well with folk art? Like, this piece, if I'm going to do a piece of folk art, I want to do it on this wood. Or, honey, like you might say, I want to do a fantasy piece. I want to do a dragon. I think it would go really good on this, either the shape of wood or live edge versus straight edge or the type of wood. Do you take those kind of things into consideration when you're thinking, this is the vibe I want to go for?
Yes.
Yes.
I absolutely do.
Yes. So, okay, so for those live edge pieces with the folk art, I had this one specific flower that I had been doing a lot, and I really liked the live edge because it looked kind of cottagecore-y. Like, I could definitely see it hanging next to, like, a witch's cauldron. Like, or like hang,
witch's cauldron?
Or like, okay. Like, not like a Halloween witch, like an herbal witch, like lavender and, like, it was just kind of folky, and that was just the vibe that I was getting from that one specific flower that I liked, and I kind of just wanted to make that flower on a couple of different pieces, and all of those folk, or all of those live edge pieces were from the same batch that David made, and they were from the same tree, so, like, they already went together naturally. I'm just thinking, I don't know, I just feel like it was more of a happy... I feel like you're just giving me way too much credit for, like, thinking about it and planning it. Like, I absolutely did not go through all of that.
Maybe you did subconsciously.
Maybe so, see, but I'm still struggling to put it into words. Like, I don't know. Did I? See,
because I could so see you doing that subconsciously. I could see you looking at this wood and just... Yeah, I think I kind of, like, want to kind of do... this on these woods, because you've done that and you just kind of go, yeah, I think I'm just gonna do,
yeah,
blah on this stuff, and it just, and it's but it is a collection in a manner of speaking.
You know what else was my thing for that is because I had made some folk art pieces freehanded at the West Virginia show, and both of them sold hot off the table, and you had said, I think you should do more like that for the next show, and that was part of my inspiration, be like, yeah, they're like $30-$40 pieces, that's a decent price range, and both of them sold hot off, like fresh off of my burner, so I'll make some more. So I think there was definitely some money driving me for that, because I'm like, oh, they'll sell, like, well they'll probably sell, so let me just make some more. So that was definitely a part of it. I totally forgot about that. But yeah, that one lady was like, I really like those. How much? I'm like, I'm not done burning them yet, but like probably $40? Okay, I'll take them. Okay.
Which pieces were that? Was that, which ones were that?
They never even made it onto Instagram or anything. I didn't get a picture of them. I was just freehanding some folk art florals at our West Virginia show. Mm-hmm. Because we had to do a live demo. We had to have an artist statement or do a live demo. So, of course, I'm just going to do my live demo because I can burn and pass the time. Mm-hmm. And this lady just really liked them.
I don't...
Live demos.
I know.
Oh, my God.
People, please, live demos.
If you can do it, do it.
If you can, do
get the live demos. Get yourself a Jackery. Get yourself a nice little toolbox to carry your stuff from show to show, and burn on the spot, because people stop. It draws a crowd. You can show people that this stuff is made by hand. People will have much more confidence, because you won't get people questioning you whether it's done with machine, and people just... love, they're fascinated by it, especially kids. And guess what? Kids don't go to shows without their parents. So if a kid's sitting there staring at the work that you're doing, their parents are going to be right there next to them. And that's a great way to get people to come into your booth, look around, see what you've made, and buy things.
Yeah, one of the greatest things about doing it live, at least for Brian and I, is that, like, I am not the speaker at the market. I would rather hide behind my burner and say nothing.
Same.
I just want to burn. I want to burn. If you speak to me, of course I will speak to you and I will explain to you. And I am fine. I've had people come and ask me questions. Little kids come up to me and that's great. Brian is the one who will greet people and tell people all the stories and whatever and whatnot. But that's why we work so well together. Because I can sit and burn, and I can hide behind my burner, and Brian can talk me up. That's how we work together. And I am very lucky to have Brian here with me in the business for that.
Except when we're setting up and I screw something up and then she yells at me.
He doesn't screw it up. It's just I have a very particular vision, and he should know what that vision is by now, so it's frustrating when he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Moving right along.
I do think that one of the things that's really cool about pyrography that makes it different than other art styles is the fact that you have the choice of canvas, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a painter, an oil painter, you can choose the size of canvas. I'm sure that there's, you know, different textures for canvases. I don't know a lot about it because I'm not a painter, but there is nowhere near the variety in shapes and colors and styles and textures in other art that I see in pyrography. And it almost is different in the fact that the wood plays as big a, or maybe not as big, but definitely a significant role in the art itself. The canvas for a painter is just that. It's just the canvas for them to put it on. Whereas in pyrography, the selection of the wood, the way that it's finished, the way that it's shaped, what picture you put on it, I feel like that's something that's really unique to pyrography.
It is so.
I have so many opinions about this. Yes, it is so unique to pyrography. And you know what? This is such a huge thing for our business because I wholeheartedly believe in this. Exactly what you said, Brian. Like, the wood plays such a huge part in your art that you have to consider it. But trying to get people to think about it, especially like beginner pyros, that's just like not clicking. And a lot of the times I feel like even us pyros, like other pyros don't get it. And like, I can't convince you to invest in good wood for your art. Like, I can't convince you to get away from the unsanded POS that you're using. It's something that you have to think about and get and really pay attention to. And some people just don't. And that is so freaking frustrating because I believe in it so wholeheartedly. And it's like part of what our business runs off of. And it's like, so many people just don't care. And I'm like, you're a pyrographer. How do you not care about the wood canvas? How do you not see how important it is? Like, it's like, I have a product that can make your life so much better and you just won't pay attention to it. Damn it. Like,
I think it has to do with dollar signs. And I think it has to do with not just pyrography, but with any form of art. You've got your high-end materials, right? And then you've got your lower-end materials, right? You've got your craft store, materials, right? Your 99-cent store materials or whatever. Whatever that material happens to be. And then you've got your fine art materials on the other end of the spectrum. When you begin, you're going to choose the craft store versions because you don't know if you're gonna like it.
Right.
You don't know if you're gonna really get into it. And who wants to spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on really good brand name stuff?
Right.
You wanna spend maybe $20 on something and see it and see if you even like
right.
it. And then the theory is hopefully you'll get to the better price stuff. But I think also, especially in today's economy, is that you get to a point, well, most people get to a point where it's like, okay, it's a hobby for a lot of people. So it's like, okay, our hobby has hit a ceiling, right? I really want this $100 brush, for instance, but can I justify paying $100 for this paintbrush when I've got to spend, you know, I've got to pay this bill or that bill or whatever the case may be. Or it's, can I justify paying $100 for this brush when I can use that $100 and buy 5 brushes instead?
Right.
They're $20 a brush, still kind of pricey, but I can get 5 brushes instead of one brush. Right. But you're going to have to suck
that's
it up.
That's what I'm saying!
You got to suck it up, Buttercup, and actually.
I know! Oh, my. Ah! Ugh, I get it, Zona. But
it's that point, though, because you get to that point, and like some people don't want to get, either they don't want to get to that point, or they refuse to get to that point, or truly they just cannot get to that point. And I think that's the ceiling, because some of us are it is just a hobby. For some of us, this is the job. And even as a job, there's still kind of that ceiling where we're like, okay, I want to get that really expensive thing because I know it would be good for my business. I know that I need that expensive thing because it would make my life so much better. It would make it, mm-hmm. it would up my game.
Yeah.
But I cannot afford it. Yeah, so I have to get the second or third best thing. You know, it is just like...
Well, I think it also comes down to your customers, right? You want to make sure that you're buying materials so that... Because you're going to pass those costs on to your customers. Mm-hmm. So you need to find customers who are going to be willing to pay those prices so you can afford to buy the materials that are going to make the best product you can possibly make.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really about getting in front of the right...
We always tell, like, if I was telling somebody trying to persuade them to buy our product as a higher end version of what Michael's is selling or, you know, what else you might be able to find. I think the biggest thing, though, is that if you're going to spend all the time and effort putting art onto it, I don't want the wood to be the thing that's holding you back. And it's something that we make sure that all of our pieces going out are the best they can be so that you aren't going to be held back by the wood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's different than canvas too. Like, I'm sure there is higher grades of canvas, but I think it's a little bit easier to prep crappy canvas to be better than it is for, like, here's your 12 by 12 piece of wood, have fun hand sanding this from saw marks to usable. And also, small little vent, we were visiting friends for a game night and somebody had gifted them a cutting board with some, like, engraved art, personal art to them, right? And it was laser engraved, and that's fine. I don't care. I mean, I understand there's a market for that, and that's fine. But what I do care about is that the cutting board itself was defective from the time it was manufactured, just wasn't cared for. And so, like, they pulled it out and were like, can you fix this, like, sand out this one little crack or whatever? And I started looking at it, and, like, anybody who took the time to look at it when they were making the cutting board would have been like, this crack isn't going to come out. Like, it's not fixable. It goes into the wood deeper and deeper.
But if it's the acacia wood and they're just batching them out in China, no one's paying attention to it. They're getting paid pennies to put them together. No one gives a crap.
Right. That company's making a billion of them. I'm just saying, we don't make a billion of them. I'm not going to ship that garbage. It's going to end up on the stairs until I cut it into small pieces and sell it as scrap.
I like that. It's gonna sit on the stairs until I sell it for scraps in a mystery bag.
Having a good canvas to start with is just so unparalleled, and I can't tell people what they're missing. They just have to figure it out for themselves, and it's so frustrating.
Well,
especially when I see friends on social media, they're like, "Look at my latest wood."
Do be careful.
You're so uncultured. Wow. Look at the wood you're using. So, like,
I said be careful and we decided to double down.
Uncultured. Oh, I'm like, oh my god, look at the wood it's on though. Like, the wood is chewed up. The wood has saw marks here. And, like, I know that this piece could look so much better than it already does if you had just taken the time to prep the freaking wood. Or, if you don't want to do that, just come buy our wood. We do it for you. So you don't have to have... But it's just one of those details that just, like, some people don't care about or don't... It's not the thing they care about, or it's money, or it's whatever. And it's like, this just breaks my freaking heart because there are so many pieces out there that I see that I think, in my opinion, could look, air quote unquote, better if they were on a better quality piece of wood. But anyway, I will stop there.
Well, I mean, and I don't think it ends at the wood, right? I mean, I think it extends to the paints that you use. It extends to the... It extends to the tool that you use, right? I mean, if you're using a low quality, $20 burner, it's going to be a lot different than if you're using, you know, a...
Yes.
Dying over there. He is dying.
I am dying. All of these things play such a huge part. And I just, I think I just get, I feel like, I don't know, like I'm a mom who's frustrated that her kid won't do better. And it's like, I know you're capable of more. I know you're capable of doing better, but you just won't do it. Why won't you do it? I know what you're capable of, damn it. And it's like,
okay, so I gotta wait to finish us out here today.
Okay,
so the top three things that people should do to make sure that their piece is the best quality it can be.
When you're planning your art, what is the top three things that you should do? Since our topic is planning the art, what is the top three things that you should do when you're planning the art?
Okay, but I think those are two separate questions, though. What are the top three things for planning your art versus what are the top three things for, like, getting the best possible piece that you can do? I'm going to start with that one. The best possible piece that you can do, you need to take the time to take care of the wood. Whatever that means. If that means you need to sand it, if that means you need to touch it up, if that means you need to get a just better piece of wood, like, take the time to actually think about the piece of wood that it's going on, because the wood makes all the dang difference in the world. Number two, take the time to learn your burner, because if you try to rush through something by using the nib that maybe doesn't quite complement your style, like if you're trying to get fine line work, but you're using the stippling nib on really unsanded wood, you're going to get blobby lines. That is going to affect the burn and how it comes out. That's not going to give you your best. Like, I know you're capable of crispy burnt lines. Just switch your freaking nib and practice with it a little bit. And if you're not feeling confident, oh, I don't know how to do flowers with this nib, then practice it. Practice it. Challenge yourself to it and practice it. Don't just jump the gun because you're so eager to get to the piece that you end up with only a half-assed piece when you could have spent maybe a little bit more time on it, practicing the things ahead of time on some scrap wood or something, investing in yourself to then get the best piece of wood. I think those are my top two for that question. I don't know that I have a third. It's the wood and the nib, the time, the practice.
I thought you were going to say something about the paints.
Well, it depends on the medium. I mean, if you're not into paint, that's fine. If you're not into adding color to your pieces, that's fine. But I think that pyrography can be so powerful in and of itself without any extra media added to it. So if you are just wanting to do black and white burns, that is totally fine. You don't need to add color in order to get a pop or high contrast. You can achieve a lot with just the burner and textures. I think that's my secret to my art a lot of the times, is I utilize textures in fun ways that really make things pop or stand out or give high contrast. And to me, that is one of the biggest things that I'm looking for, is high contrast. That's what I want to achieve. So, like, you don't need paint or color to achieve those things. You certainly can.
Fun, do you have a top three for either of those or both of those topics?
It was top three for planning your art, and what was the second
top
question?
Top three that you should think of to get the best piece you possibly can.
I definitely think, in terms of getting the best possible piece, number one, prep your wood, right? You know, whatever, like, when I say whatever prepping your wood means, right? Like, cleaning up your wood, whether that means getting rid of the dust and the loose bits and pieces. If it's a piece of live edge wood, getting rid of, you know, the dust, the dirt, the pieces that are falling off, or gluing it, or whatever the case is, sanding it down, filling in the cracks or the holes if you wanted to do that, or leaving it or whatever, but definitely prepping the wood, sanding it down definitely sanding. Oh my God, the difference between sanded and unsanded wood. I mean, I remember when I first started, I didn't know to sand down the wood at all. And I mean, I started off with pine like we all did. And I was just like, the hell is this mess? And that was the thing. I was like, I hated the blobby lines and I couldn't figure out why. And I had all the resin gunk and I was like,
this sucks.
I hated it. I hated it so much. And then I couldn't figure out why I was getting headaches because, oh, I don't know. I was snuffing the smoke because I liked the way it smelled, not realizing that's why I was getting headaches, mm-hmm. but whatever. But yeah, it's sand. But then someone said, sand down your wood. And I was like, oh, well, let's try that. And I was like,
I know
the difference.
You know, and so sanding it, definitely sand it down. And I sand down my wood to at least 120 or 220. And like, I go by the wood. Sometimes 120 is fine. Sometimes I'll go down to 220. I just generally don't go down any further than that because I tend to burn hot, burn deep. But then I sand it down again anyway. After I sand down the overburn, usually.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Because usually what I'll do is I'll do the pattern, burn hot, burn deep, so I'll have the overburn, and then I sand it, and then I'll do the shading and the color.
Mm-hmm.
And
all of that. Yeah.
So I'm like, why burn it to two? Why sand it down to 220 when I'm gonna sand it down again anyway? Mm,
makes sense.
So I don't bother anymore. But so definitely sand it, prep it, whatever it is. Prep your wood. Know your tools, whatever your the encompassing big area of tools. Whether it's your burner, how you transfer your pattern. I do heat transfers with the laser printer. I know, Renee, you have your way of doing it with the inkjet printer. You have that way. I know people do freehand. I know people do with the graphite paper. However, which way it is that you do it, know your tools, how you do it. Like, I can't do graphite paper because I cannot get the lines the way I want it. They get discombobulated and I hate it, which is why I like the laser printer. Mm-hmm. But know your burner, like you said, know your nibs. Know how hot to burn. Like, I learned that some nibs, I get a very fine line burning hotter on some, burning lower on others. Mm-hmm. I'll get a certain kind of technique. I'll get a certain look with this nib at this temperature versus on a higher heat or using the same nib. But it's all about knowing my nibs. Yep. And like I said, after I do the initial line, the outline, and I sand it down, and then I get down to shading. But again, knowing your shader. Paint. Or if you're going to paint.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Knowing your paints, because some paints work better with certain wood.
Yep.
And some paints are translucent, and you need to know this. Some paints are chunky, and you need layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer, and some of them you need to do as thin as possible to make it look good, right? Some paints sink into the wood. Some just sit right on top.
Mm-hmm.
Some change color as they dry.
True.
There's so many different things to know. So you should know your all your mediums of all sorts.
And that's
sorts
just spending time with them. That's just practicing, mm-hmm. playing, and spending time.
Practice. Yes.
One thing to know about Zona. Yeah. One thing to know about Zona is when she gives a top list of things, they're subcategories. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's 1A, it's 1B, yes. It's 1C, it's 2, and then we get to 2. Yeah. So this is something that you need to understand. It may sound like it's 15 different things, but there's a hierarchy to them.
Yes, there's definitely a hierarchy.
Okay, so your third category, Zona.
Sealant.
Mm.
Know your sealant.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
you can F it up at the very end. Uh-huh.
Do I know?
Oh, we all know. We don't have to get into it. We all know. It sucks.
I learned that last year on a piece that I did on your wood.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's okay. It's trauma. We don't have to talk about it.
I'm so traumatized. Let me tell you how traumatized I am. I'm 3 seconds away from sanding it down and redoing it with a different sealer. The sealer that I should have used to begin with. That's how frustrated I am with it. And I wish that I'd used the more expensive sealer that I should have used to begin
with. I feel that.
Yeah. So, know your sealer. I have learned. Know your sealer. Mm-hmm.
We could always plane it down for you. Or you have a planer. You don't have a... Oh, your neighbor has a planer or something.
He has... Yes, he has a planer. I mean, I could always take it to Maker's Space.
Okay. But. I was going to say, like, we could plane it down for you.
It's a piece of cherry wood with that's chamfered edges. Because I love it when you do the chamfered edges.
We could do the chamfered edges again.
Oh, God, I love your chamfered
They're so good.
Oh, God, I love your chamfered edges peaches. I love the way that finish, that finished look. Oh.
It's so good.
Okay, let me stop drilling. It is so good, and I wish you did more of those, but I'm sure that's a pain in the ass to do. So
depends on the wood.
Yeah. Any other closing thoughts?
But that was that question. Well, we didn't even answer the planning the art part question.
Well, it sounded like there was still some debate as to whether or not there was a top three for that.
I feel like there's a lot of carryover.
I do. I feel like you're going to kind of be answering the same question.
Okay, planning the art. Let's see. Like, real quick. Top three of planning the art. Know the theme of the market. Right? If there's a theme to the market. Or the show, right?
Oh, if you're prepping for a specific event?
Mm-hmm. If you're prepping for a specific
event. Or a specific, if you're doing it for an art. Like, a lot of times, if they're having an art show, there might be a theme. It might be seaside. It might be had one that was the Audubon, right? It was, you didn't do it. We were looking at it. It was like a waterfowl expo or something like that. You know, they had.
Oh, you sent that to me, like last year.
Yeah.
Or the year before, maybe.
So, you know, sometimes it's important to know if you're going to be entering into a show if they have a theme. And there's a lot of them that do have themes.
If there's a theme, plan for that, right?
Kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it seems like, between the two of you, one of the secrets to planning your art is to have a large stockpile of wood that you can stare at occasionally.
This is true, yes. I need options.
The larger, the better.
Yes, correct.
Options. We need our options, but not too many options.
Where can we get said stockpile of wood?
Oh, darn, yes. Where could we possibly get
it? Not us. I don't know.
What am I supposed to? I'm the one who's supposed to shamelessly promote us, not you.
Yes, you're the woodworker. Go for it.
You can get all of the glorious wood options you need at itsdavidandrenee.com.
And we are so very close to finalizing our wood catalog, where you can enter your dimensions and pick your side, like your edges, and you can pick the wood option. And then place your order, and we'll make it for you.
The made-to-order.
The made-to-order wood catalog?
Yeah, it's more like a made-to-order menu than like a full catalog. But it's basically, the hardest part has been getting it onto the internet. Otherwise, it's been done.
Yeah,
if only you knew somebody who worked in the internet who could help you with such things.
Well, we got it. The past few days have been figuring out the formula, because the app that we're using through Shopify, you can enter a formula based on the dimensions that you enter, but our formula is not linear. Like, if we were doing, okay, let's just say 50 cents per square inch, a 5x5 would be 12.5. And a 10x10 would be 25. But then, no, the one that you said, the 10x10 gave us like $50. And it's like, okay, well, that's not right. That's, it's not
100 square inches.
Yeah, I don't quite remember. It was, something like that. But it was like, it's not a linear function. It's an, what did you call it? An asymptotic.
I didn't function. Use that one because I couldn't, the computer wasn't ready.
Anyway, it's just been a lot of math. He's been mathing. And I think we finally got it. But anyway, just plugging that out there. If you're looking for wood and you're like, man, I really want to order like these cherry panels, 8x9s, but like they don't have any on their website. Guess what we do? You can just enter it and then buy them. And it'll come through as a custom order. Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
We should really think about Brian next time, though. Instead of beating our heads against the wall, we should just beat Brian's head against the wall and maybe it'll go faster.
Exactly.
I'll do a fine job of that myself. Thank you very much.
We'll just let him worry about that.
His head is hardened from years of programming.
Of being beaten against the wall. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think that's
good. Yeah, I got
I think
you guys.
That's good. That's
need,
a good wrap.
Need him, but I think
that's
so.
That's our pluggable for this time.
That is our plug.
That's a perfect. By the time this comes out, that'll definitely be on the
yep.
on the site.
Yep.
Did you have any plugs for today, hon?
This is coming out in March, so we've got No Homebrew and for the March collection, which I have not named yet. And then in April, we've got Mint Museum.
Mint Museum, if you are in the Charlotte area and you are near the, you have a little bit of time to kill, next month, stop into the Mint Museum. They're going to have an entire floor dedicated to art by local Charlotte artists. Take a peek, see what Zona's come up with. We will be keeping that under wraps for the time being, but she's got something big planned. And come see all of the other great local Charlotte artists. We've been getting to know them. They're wonderful people. There's a really diverse set of talents. It's not limited to just oil paintings, and watercolors. They've got pottery artists, they've got, digital artists, they've got mixed media artists. The president of the, guild,
Michael,
he is a kind of a mixed media artist. He, has some really cool collages and stuff like that that he puts together. Very, very amazing artist. And I think if you have some time and you're in the area, go check it out. Well worth it.
There's also the downtown Monroe Art Walk that we'll be a part of in April. Because I believe this episode is going to come out late March. So we'll be doing the April stuff. So it'll be Mint Museum and the Monroe Art Walk. And I think this is also right before the Sun Valley.
Or check bzfurfur.com and we'll have all of our upcoming events on there.
That too. Or check out our Instagram, bz_furfur.
All right. And with that, as always, come check out our Instagrams. If you follow Pyro Toasty Talks on Instagram, you'll find out when the new episodes drop. Follow It's David and Renee on Instagram for information on where they're going to be and what they're working on and when wood drops are going to happen and timber doodle things are going to happen. Follow at @bz_furfur to see what Zona and I are up to. Check out the website, pyrotoastytalks.com. Look at our Discord if you want to join the conversation, contribute ideas. And if you want to buy some swag, help keep the podcast going, show your support, buy yourself a t-shirt. Pine sucks, we all know it. Might as well just wear a shirt that states it. And with that, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.